I'm Cara Laurence. This is WMUK's Let's Hear It. Llewellyn Sanchez-Werner, a 2014 Gilmore Young Artist, will be showcased at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival in a concerto appearance with the Grand Rapids Symphony Orchestra and in three solo recitals. As is always the case with Gilmore Prizes, Llewellyn Sanchez-Werner was given the news when he was least expecting it.
I was absolutely thrilled to find out that I was selected as a Gilmore Young Artist. I actually remember the day that I found out. I'll tell you about that. I had just returned home from a jog with my mom in Central Park. And I got home, I was just checking my messages, and I saw that I had a message from an unknown number. And so I didn't know if it was a wrong number or what it was. I listened to it, and it was, "Hello, Mr. Sanchez-Werner. This is Daniel Augustin. I'm the director of the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. I have an important message for you." And this obviously really excited me. So I immediately called back, and I was just delighted. I was really just thrilled to find out that I was able to join such an impressive roster of pianists and artists and to be able to work with people who have done so much for the arts. So I'm excited. I was very excited.
What do you think it'll be like to hang out with a whole band of pianists? I mean, everywhere you look, you'll see your peers who are normally stuck in practice rooms.
Oh, it'll be great. I mean, we all speak the same language. We all love what we do. We all share the same passion for piano, for the arts. So no, it will be wonderful. And there are many other great pianists who will be at the festival, who I'm looking forward to meeting.
So you were jogging in Central Park, you said. So you must live in New York with your parents are there, and you're going to Juilliard. Is that right?
Yes, I am going to Juilliard, and I also live in New York with my mom.
Okay. At Juilliard, I've always heard what it can be a demanding school, but it's also a place where you foster relationships that you keep your whole life long, like with your teacher, for example. Are you finding that to be the case?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Juilliard is filled with an incredible faculty, and not only in piano, which is certainly the case, but in everything, in history and theory and solfege and liberal arts. And I sort of feel as if you do, in fact, develop lifelong friendships with these people. They sort of become mentors in a way. The conversations, the experiences that one can have absolutely change your entire philosophy, change your approach. It's a remarkable experience to be here, especially in the heart of Manhattan, next to Lincoln Center. Mm-hmm. Surrounded by such a strong diversity and a strong sense of culture. It's really great.
That sounds fantastic. I had a conversation with a pianist from Juilliard who appeared last fall at the Gilmore as part of the Rising Star series. His name was Stephen Lin.
And oh, yeah.
Juilliard was very much a crucible, kind of very transforming, where before he went to Juilliard, although he was a great pianist, he was a little disengaged, even bored with playing piano. And being at Juilliard and talking to his classmates kind of reinvigorated him and opened up his desire to become a unique musician.
Well, absolutely. And one thing I will say in agreement with his statement is that Dr. Joseph Polisi, who is the president of Juilliard right now, has done an excellent job, I feel, of really creating an incredible community for interdivisional collaboration. So in addition to what Stephen Lin was saying, it's working with dancers, working with actors. And because of a very, very strong liberal arts program, we're also being exposed to many, many things that kind of round out our entire experience becoming artists. We write better, we speak better, we are able to interact better with the world around us. I absolutely agree, though, with Stephen's comments.
You accepted an engagement to perform with the Iraqi Symphony in Iraq.
Yes.
Tell me about that experience.
Oh, of course. Well, I felt very honored to work with the Iraqi National Symphony Orchestra. They are a courageous group of people. Let me tell you. Now, while the Iraqi community as a whole embraces what they do, and wholeheartedly, there are extremists, violent extremists who are opposed to really any kind of artistic expression, but especially that from the West. So regularly, many of these instrumentalists were threatened in one way or another, so much so that they had to carry their instruments, they had to conceal their instruments in boxes or in any containment that didn't look like an instrument case on their way to rehearsal. And then they sometimes would have their instruments have to go through bomb-sniffing dogs and lots of security, but still, they work tirelessly to give back to their community. And they play with such an incredible level of intensity and emotional depth. It was really amazing to work with them.
It's so hard to put in words just how music can move you to your very core. It's almost impossible to talk about that feeling, but I've seen it happen, and it can be just so amazing.
Oh, without question. And you know, my hope is that our warm-hearted collaboration using music, which was our common language, was able to help bridge two cultures and transcend political barriers in this way.
Well, this might seem off topic, but how do you follow world affairs? What information sources do you trust and tend to look at every day?
Oh, well, I think that it's very, very important to keep up to date with global events. And so I have lots of updates constantly coming in from New York Times and from CNN on my phone. And whenever I have a chance, I try to read articles and to look up very interesting interviews.
Did you actually make friendships where you can, you know, get some real status updates from people?
One person who I have worked with again since then, Karim Wasfi, the conductor, I also played with him in the Kennedy Center. And yes, no, we definitely we stay in touch. In regards to keeping up with global events, one passion that I do have, one very strong interest that I do have is, as I said, the idea of transcending political and cultural barriers. And so I'm constantly keeping an eye out for ways in which people have done this. There's, of course, Daniel Barenboim and his work with the West Eastern Divan Orchestra, in which he gave Jews and Arabs a platform with which they could collaborate. And you know, it was a project against intolerance, against ignorance, to show that people could resort to music rather than knives when there are differences. I recently read about Barney Josephson and the Cafe Society, and how he was able to allow a forum once again for African American performers to integrate Black and white audiences at the same time that just uptown and at the Cotton Club, Black performers could not enter through normal entrances, and they had to enter through the service entrance even if they were performing. And so lots of ways in which I suppose music has been used with a social conscience, a social idea.
Well, I don't think the Gilmore was founded on social justice issues, but it is a great home for pianists, and it'll be a wonderful chance for you to perform multiple times, not only in solo recitals, but with orchestra.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, first of all, I am with the Grand Rapids Symphony. I'm performing the Saint-Saëns Second Concerto in G minor.
The Saint-Saëns Second Concerto, is this the one that has sort of an allusion or a homage to Bach?
It does. It has a very interesting sort of improvisatory opening. Like a Bach organ improvisation. It's rich and imitative texture, and one vision that I had for it is that it's determined to escape the inevitability of these ringing low bells, these low G octaves, that it's pushing forward and forward, gradually adding more motion. And then the entire piece supplies an array of tender and melancholic melodies, especially the second theme, which is a very, very poignant and delicate one. And, And, you know, then the second movement, for example, is lighter, it's more energetic, it's a scherzo, and, you know, it's mischievous, it's at times it can be really hilarious, but there are constant swirls and torrents of motion. And then there's the final movement, which is relentless. With a demented opening theme that it transforms into one that is perhaps more whimsical.
Well, Llewellyn, you've given us a lot to look forward to in just that concerto, but you're not stopping there. You have three solo recitals you're playing at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, the same program for each one, luckily, and I believe you'll be starting with Franz Liszt.
That's right. It begins with Liszt, with the Ballet of Dobermann, and let me tell you, this is really an incredibly moving piece that's very close to my heart. It actually is based on, as so much of Liszt music is, it's based on a poem of Lord Byron. It's a transcendent work. I mean, I think of Liszt and his inspiration from Dante, from the Divine Comedy in the Dante Sonata. I think of his experimentation with Victor Hugo, for example, in Mazeppa, the Transcendental Etude. And this is another example. You know, every single marking, every single phrase is so carefully planned out, has so much meaning. And after a sense of wandering, after a sense of real despair and real torture, there's sort of a redemption in a way. It's virtuosic, it's exciting, it's extremely rich in color and in idea. I really love this piece. So anyway, I start with this to open the program. And then I go to something completely different, and that's Ravel, Alborada del Gracioso. And this is a Spanish flavored piece. Of course, Ravel was born just a few miles away from the Spanish-French border. And we hear, I think his father was a Swiss watchmaker. So we hear the precision, we hear the rhythmic clarity, perhaps from his father, but then we hear the sweet, the sensuous, the Spanish dance from his mother. And then I end the first half with Beethoven, with the late Opus 110 A flat major sonata. And of course, all 32 Beethoven piano sonatas represent a great landmark in piano literature. There's almost too much to say about this. From the opening chorale, a certain kind of sublimation surrounds the first movement, something effervescent, something crystalline, something extremely tender. Then the almost violent and sarcastic scherzo second movement, to absolutely from nothing, emerging from nothing, the third movement, which then through a recitativo, through a delicate dolce aria, and through a transcendent fugue, one similar to the Liszt in a way, arrive at such a powerful ending, climax, summit.
How are you at sight reading?
I think I'm pretty good at sight reading. I sight read often anyway, because, you know, that's not only piano music, but symphonies, string quartets at the piano. Actually, one thing, there's a teacher at Juilliard, Baruch Arnon, who some people will know. He's a keyboard studies teacher, and he teaches us to do all wild things, to transpose lead at the piano down intervals, to as I said, to be able to sight read symphonies and string quartets right at the piano, and to give us tools that give us more comfort, give us more ease in our pianistic structure. And so, you know, tools like that allow me to just have fun sight reading.
The reason I asked is there are 32 sonatas by Beethoven. You want to find one that feels right for this program, or feels right for the pieces you've included. And I just wondered if you had that sort of joy of reading all of them and just getting to know Beethoven as a young man and his middle age and his final years, and then pick just the right one for your program.
Oh, of course, of course. And I mean, I played several of his other sonatas, Wolfstein, Arteres, from Opus 31, from Opus 10. And the amazing thing to me is that Beethoven seems almost to be a mirror of the human condition. And I do not say that in an attempt to exaggerate. I really mean it, that every phrase represents something so integral to a human, to an aspect of human emotion. And of course, you know, there is an evolution. There is an evolution throughout his works. And honestly, I feel as if some of his earlier works can be extremely spiritual in a way. But this sonata is particularly dear to me. The one that I'm going to perform, the 110. It's one that I've been looking forward to playing for a long time, and I just decided the time was right.
So the second half of the program starts off with a very special piece by Mr. Llewellyn Sanchez Werner.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, Chasing Serenity. That's right. I'm curious to see how the audience will respond. You know, one thing I was originally thinking of doing was not putting a name for the piece and asking the audience to decide what they wanted the name to be. I decided against this in the end and to just give it a title, Chasing Serenity, but I don't want to go into it too much, if that's all right. I don't want to give a description. I'd like them to experience it without any preconceptions.
All right. Well, let's move on. What are you playing after that then?
After that, I'm playing the Chopin Polonaise Fantasy. We hear the national identity of Poland all throughout the work in the Polonaise rhythm, just as we would in a mazurka. What amazes me about this piece is that he combines those themes with something once again extremely tender, you know, and extremely lyrical. And it's harmonically very bold also. I have to say that in many ways, it almost predicts certain harmonies that we would hear much, much later. And this is actually one of my favorite pieces. I really adore this piece.
What a program. Chopin, one of your own works, Liszt and Beethoven. Where will you take us from here?
Two more pieces, actually. The first of the last two, Rachmaninoff, Moments Musicaux, the first in B-flat minor. This is one that will change the mood of the second half a little bit. It's a lot more dark, tempestuous, gloomy, perhaps. And it's misty. There's a fog surrounding a little melody trying to find its way out. And a couple of times it almost succeeds. There's a moment of hope, but actually then it just falls right back down. But the level of ambiguity, the question that is asked at the end of that piece, I think leads well into the Ravel, La Valse, which is what I'm ending the program with. And this piece also begins in an ambiguous way. There's a sort of a storm. A foreboding storm of what is to come, and out of that emerges a fun, a spirited, colorful, and eventually just wild waltz that ends with real thunder. And that's it.
What a great way to end a very rich program. Llewellyn, it's been so nice getting to know you a little bit and having the chance to chat. I know you will be a big hit at the Gilmore. Thanks so much and see you very soon.
Oh, well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. It's been a real treat. Thank you so much.